Hello, welcome to the CityWire Funds Fanatic podcast. My name's Gavin Lumsden, and with me is my colleague Daniel Grote, editor of the CityWire Funds Insider website. Dan, good to talk to you again. It's clear what this week's big topic is. It's a topic we've talked about a lot in the past. Hargreaves Lansdowne, the UK's biggest funds broker, this week unveiled its new wealth shortlist. We should have a drum roll, really. There's been a lot of expectation building up around what it was going to do. The funny thing, though, is this shortlist has got 68 funds, is actually a little bit longer than the previous version of what used to be known, going back a bit, as the Wealth 150. It comes with a raft of changes. There's lots of funds going in, but there's also new fund tools on the website, and there's an emphasis on the oversight and governance of the whole process following the tarnishing of Hargreaves' reputation in the Neil Woodford scandal last year. So, Dan, you know, let's start with that first. I mean, you've been looking at this closely, but before we get into the kind of, you know, who's in and out on the fund side, let's stick at the big picture, because remind us, what was the issues raised by for Hargreaves by the collapse of Neil Woodford's business?
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right that these changes to Hargreaves Lansdowne's fund buy list have been made in light of what happened to the broker and its recommendation of the Woodford Equity Income Fund in particular. Hargreaves Lansdowne was a very big backer of Neil Woodford. It promoted his funds very strongly when the manager set up his own fund group and channeled a lot of money into his funds. Hargreaves Lansdowne customers owned more than a fifth of the main fund, Woodford Equity Income. And we all know what happened to that fund. It was suspended last year. Neil Woodford had been building pretty big positions in unquoted companies and hard to trade companies. And so when he was hit with a lot of withdrawals as performance deteriorated, and in particular a withdrawal request from Kent County Council, he wasn't able to sell things quickly enough to give investors their money back. Hargreaves, they cut that fund from the what was then the Wealth 50, but only after his fund had been suspended. It also cut the Woodford Income Focus Fund, his smaller fund. And that really has tarnished Hargreaves Lansdowne, and in particular, it's tarnished its fund buy list and the sort of favourite fund picks that it highlights for its huge band of customers.
So, as you say, there was a huge conflict of interest raised by that saga. And so their response to this is to make a number of changes in the way the process is run, tightening up on the process, I think expanding the investment team that is picking and analysing funds for the shortlist. But most importantly, there's a separate team now looking at the wealth shortlist from the team that is running Hargreaves Lansdowne own funds, because some listeners might not be aware, but the Hargreaves is not only the country's, you know, it's a big platform where you can, a website where you can go and buy funds, but they're actually a fund management company in their own right. And that does create conflicts of interest, potentially, as the Neil Woodford case showed, that Hargreaves Lansdowne funds, multi-manager funds, funder funds were invested in Neil Woodford. You know, and so there was a huge amount of the business kind of pinned on the declining performance of that fund manager. And there was concern, natural concern, justifiable concern, that, you know, maybe it wasn't taking the decisions quickly enough, the right decisions on behalf of the investors who were investing directly through its platform. So there are now two teams, but there's a continuity there as well. So we have the team picking the shortlist funds is someone we know, Emma Wall. She's a former Morning Star and Telegraph journalist. She's head of investment analysis. And then alongside her is a very familiar name as well, Mark Dompier, the head of fund research, who was the longstanding backer of Neil Woodford, and the main reason, I think, why it was included for so long. It was reported wrongly that Mark Dompier was retiring last year as a result of the scandal over Woodford. That's not the case. He's still there very much as head of fund research. So Emma Wall is head of the team, but he's still there. And they've got four analysts under them, all holding appropriate investment qualifications. What do you think of that?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's worth underlining with the Woodford Fund that, you know, part of the reason that Hargreaves had such a big stake in that fund was not only was it promoting it a lot to its own customers, but it held a lot of it in its own funds, in its multi-manager funds. Every multi-manager fund that had the remit to allow investment in UK funds held either Woodford Equity Income or the Woodford Income Focus Fund. It's worth pointing out as well that prior to these changes, there have also been changes in the way that those multi-manager funds are run to decouple them from the fund buy list, from what's now the wealth shortlist. So increasingly with those funds, there has been a move towards what are called segregated mandates. So instead of the Hargreaves funds buying stakes in funds that you or I could invest in, they ask the manager of those funds to run a portion of money for them. One of the benefits of this is that they are in control of that stake. So they're less vulnerable to in an issue like what arose with Woodford Equity Income, where a fund has to suspend because other investors want to pool their money.
I see. So it's a separate pool of money, so that if Neil Woodford had been managed by them on that basis, even if his main fund had gone down, their segregated mandate would have been okay.
Yeah.
Is that the situation?
You would have had the same performance issues, and they were bad, you know, but you wouldn't have had the suspension, or the suspension wouldn't have affected those Hargreaves Lansdown multi-manager funds, which even now, like all investors in Woodford Equity Income, they've got a rump of money that they're just waiting to get back.
And that team is run by, it's a separate team run by Lee Gardhouse, is that right? And it's his own team of fund managers.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which brings us on to one of the big sort of talking points around the change was the continued exclusion of Fundsmith. There was an exchange of words between the two over that, with Hargreaves claiming that actually Fundsmith, Terry Smith, doesn't really provide the data, the regular data that they want to be comfortable about including his very big Fundsmith equity, very big and very successful Fundsmith equity. But other people think, you know, its non-inclusion just, you know, it continues to sort of underline how untransparent and unclear you know, Hargreaves' selection process is. Terry Smith was criticising them for being a rival fund manager, going back to this point that Hargreaves is in the strange situation of being a broker, an intermediary, but at the same time also a provider of financial products themselves, in this case, investment funds. You know, both sides have got a point in this, haven't they?
Well, you're right in that 17 funds were added as part of these changes, but the big story is the fund that wasn't added, Fundsmith Equity. It's the UK's largest online stockbroker and the UK's largest fund, and they haven't been able to sort of ameliorate that relationship. Hargreaves Lansdown has, for a long time, been forced, really, to defend why it doesn't include Fundsmith Equity on its list. It's the biggest fund in the UK and it's a very strong performing global fund. You know, for a while, Hargreaves' defence was that Terry Smith, who launched the fund in 2010, hadn't been around long enough to provide a good enough track record to give confidence that his performance would persist. In particular, he hadn't been through a downturn. His fund was launched after the financial crisis, so hadn't been tested by the extreme stock market volatility that we saw back then. You know, obviously, with this year, I mean, we don't know what's going to happen with the coronavirus crisis, whether there will be further heavy falls, but we have seen a lot of stock market volatility in the first half of this year, and Fundsmith Equity has done pretty well. You know, it's got a lot of technology stocks and consumer staple stocks, the sorts of things that have held up well as stock markets have fallen. But, you know, you're right to point out that now it's around the data that Fundsmith provide.
Hargreaves are saying that Fundsmith only provides full disclosure, the full portfolio of that fund every 6 months, and they want that every month. You know, that seems a pretty clear requirement. But others are saying, hang on, this is just another excuse not to, you know, hold your rival, your opponent.
Fundsmith doesn't provide this sort of monthly full kind of portfolio data, which actually, in terms of what we as the sort of general public get to see, it was only really going back to Neil Woodford. It was only really Neil Woodford who did that and presented his full portfolio every month, so you could see everything that he held and what he'd been buying and what he'd been selling. But funds do provide that level of detail to, you know, companies like Morningstar, the data provider. Fundsmith doesn't. It provides that sort of data on a six-month basis. Terry Smith doesn't like disclosing what he doesn't have to disclose. He doesn't announce stocks that he's buying until he's built up the position that he wants in them. You know, when he launched his fund, he said that, you know, he wouldn't tell anyone what was in it if he was allowed to. And their fund fact sheet, it will detail the top 10 stocks, but it won't detail the weightings in each. But on the other hand, especially with regards to liquidity, Fundsmith does provide every month a gauge of how easily the stocks held in the fund can be traded. So it says how much of the fund could be sold within 7 days. And in its latest fact sheet to the end of June, that stands at 71%. And Terry Smith's argument is, well, I don't provide this data to other investors, so why should I make a special case for Hargreaves Lansdown?
And that liquidity data is actually what Hargreaves is now focusing more on when in this investment team, when they're compiling their reports and reporting to a board, and they're doing their monthly and quarterly reviews. They're very much looking at the amount of liquidity, how easy it is for a fund manager to get in and out of their big positions to avoid the fiasco of Neil Woodford. So you'd think there would be some common ground there. But of course, you know, what this is really about underneath is that commercial relationship and the role of discounts and funds cutting their charges to in order to get onto the shortlist. Fundsmith, correct me if I'm wrong, I'm not wrong, am I, to say that Fundsmith will not give up any of its annual charge to get onto any platform, never mind Hargreaves.
Well, and that's, Fundsmith's success has been remarkable in being able to build a business that's as big as it is now. Fundsmith Equity holds more than £20 billion without engaging in that sort of business transaction with Hargreaves Lansdown. You know, lots of other fund groups need to do that to get their funds out to as many investors as they can. But Fundsmith, you know, not only through platforms, but it has its own direct business, it's been able to do that, you know, independently.
How many people, I'm curious, yeah, how many people, what sort of proportion of people are buying, you know, kind of bucking the trend in the investment industry and buying Fundsmith direct from Terry Smith's company?
Well, it is cheaper to do that. The fund cost is higher if you go through the share class that's offered directly to Fundsmith customers. But it's not the difference between the direct share class and the platform share class. It's not as big as what you would pay a platform if you were holding it on there. I mean, the direct business is still smaller than its platform business. You know, even though Fundsmith isn't on Hargreaves Lansdown's buy list, and, you know, it's still very well held by Hargreaves Lansdown customers.
Yes, it's still available on the platform, isn't it? I mean, we're spending an awful lot of time talking about, you know, the shortlist, but in fact, and people are commenting on your stories have expressed reservations, but actually, you know, other people say, well, setting that aside, it's still a great platform in which to do your own research. But the other key thing here, isn't it, is this going back to the sort of role of discounts that Hargreaves is able to secure. It's insisting that there is no connection between those discounts it secures and inclusion in the shortlist. Does the evidence support that claim?
Well, the account they give is that before this change to its fund buy list, the way it would operate would be that the investment analysis team would draw up the funds that they liked, compose their list of favourite funds, and then that list would be taken by the distribution team and they would use it to hammer out discounts from fund groups. And at the beginning of last year, when what was the Wealth 150 was revamped and shortened to become the Wealth 50, every single fund on that list had a discount, and Hargreaves had used the overhaul of its list as an opportunity to hammer out more discounts from fund groups that were already cutting their fees for it. Now that discounting has been decoupled really from the way that it composes its list. So if we look at the funds that have come on, no new discounts have been secured as a result of these changes. So Hargreaves is really trying to combat that perception that to get on the buy list, you need to discount your fund.
So let's have a look then at what has been added. As you say, it's not been a case of taking things off. It's been more a case of putting more things on. I saw there was a great comment from one of our readers of, you know, bit mean, but I'm going to quote it, about Hargreaves Lansdown, say, great admin, absolute rubbish buy list. So that's someone who's clearly got reservations about the selection process. But what did you make of it? You've had a close look at the, was it 17 new funds going on? Were they credible choices?
Going back to Fundsmith, one of the reasons that we're looking at it in so much detail is, you know, not only is it a spat between the biggest platform in the country and the biggest fund manager, but if you look at the global sector in particular on Hargreaves' buy list, that is one that has been diminished by the cutting of Lindsay Train Global Equity last summer because of Nick Train and Michael Lindsay's growing stake in Hargreaves Lansdown's own shares. So there was a conflict of issue presented by that Hargreaves felt the only way it could resolve was by cutting them from the list. So if you look at the global funds they have in there now, it is really lacking that sort of global superstar fund manager that they had in Nick Train and Michael Lindsay, and they could have had they included Terry Smith and Fundsmith Equity on the list. In terms of the new additions, there's Fidelity Global Dividend, Trojan Global Income, which are both good funds and both funds that have performed well over, you know, the last 1, 3, and in Fidelity Global Dividend's case, 5 years. They've outperformed the global equity income sector, which is a sector that's not done as well as the global sector, because dividend paying stocks haven't done as well as the likes of, you know, Facebook and Amazon. But if you look at the list as a whole in terms of that global segment, Rathbone Global Opportunities would be the one that you would pick out now as the most sort of straightforward competitor to Lindsay Train and Fundsmith. It's a growth focused global fund and has done well, not as well as Fundsmith and Lindsay Train, but elsewhere it's very focused on income, and where it's not, they're passives or Jupiter Global Value Equity, for example, which is a very sort of value focused approach and hasn't done as well because value has been out of favour.
So it's a big hole in the global, but otherwise the choices are sort of fairly reasonable. Do our Citywire fund manager ratings shed any insight or endorsement of any of these choices?
Well, looking at the performance of some of the funds that they've picked, I mean, you can really separate out Fidelity Special Situations as the one fund they've picked that hasn't done well. You know, Alex Wright has had a very difficult few years of performance, and that's, you know, largely because he has this contrarian value approach to investing that has been deeply out of favour in recent years. And so if you look at the performance of that fund over 1, 3, 5 years, it's doing worse than the sector that it's in, the Investment Association UK All Companies sector, and it's had a particularly bad 2020. It's lost a quarter of its value so far this year. I mean, if you're looking elsewhere in the list, it has picked some stellar performers. Baillie Gifford American has been an incredible performer over all time scales. It's up nearly 300% over 5 years.
It's interesting you mentioned Baillie Gifford, Dan, because one of the regrettable features of the shortlist is the continued non-exclusion of investment trusts. We've discussed this in the past. Hargreaves wants to have funds that are, you know, liquid and big and good performing, they say. But to the trouble with investment trusts is this sort of separation between the share price and the underlying net asset value, and that there's a potential for investment trust shares to rise to big premiums and big discounts below the underlying value, which could be exacerbated by their including and directing people to buy or sell them implicitly through the shortlist. But I've been looking at the performance of investment trusts. We've just had the second quarter's just passed. We're past the halfway point of the year. And looking at the performance between the end of May and the end of June, it's striking. There's been a massive, I mean, this is a good news story. There's been a massive rebound from the horror show that was in the first quarter. Markets have rebounded virtually everywhere. UK, possibly the weakest recovery amongst global markets, US markets and Asia. But I mentioned Baillie Gifford because their growth style is clearly in favour, and a lot of their investment trusts, like the Global Scottish Mortgage Trust, is up nearly 50% in the second quarter, and that leaves them up 42% for the year. You know, there are many, many trusts and funds that have done well, rebounded in the second quarter, but are still below their starting point of in January. But Scottish Mortgage is one of those. And there are others in the Baillie Gifford stable, you know, leading the tops of their sectors amongst investment trusts. I'd mention that their global smaller companies, Edinburgh Worldwide, again, it's up 51% in the second quarter. So Hargreaves have got a point around investment trusts and the discounts and the premiums and that being a problem. But it is a shame, once again, that some trusts that are really capable of very strong performance can't get a look into this influential list.
I mean, I think it's probably worth pointing out as well is, you know, the temptation when looking at, you know, what Hargreaves has done with its additions to the list is just to draw up, which is exactly what I've done, draw up a table of their performance over the relevant scales and compare it to either the index or the sector that they're in. And, you know, of course, what Hargreaves is trying to do is not just pick a list of which funds have performed best over the last 5 years. You know, we can all do that. What they're trying to do is to pick funds that they think will do well in the future. And I mean, Fidelity Situation, Special Situations is, you know, a case in point, because that is a fund that hasn't done well. And it's saying that it thinks that it can do, given manager Alex Wright's processes and his experience. And if there is this resurgence in value investing, that someone like Alex Wright would be well poised to do well. That is, you know, that's a fund that used to be Anthony Bolton's fund, used to be one of the biggest funds in the country, and used to be on Hargreaves Lansdown's buy list, but was cut at the beginning of last year and never gave a discount to Hargreaves. And so that, I guess, the suspicion would be that when there was so much emphasis on discounts when they revamped the buy list last year, that now there isn't so much that emphasis, that it's okay to bring it back in.
Okay. Well, let's maybe start to conclude. I mean, it's a shame that there's this sort of row with Fundsmith, because it does sort of cloud the issues. It does seem in a number of areas that after Woodford, you know, after the huge setback, a damaging blow to Hargreaves' reputation from Woodford, that you know, they are trying to move forward and make some sensible reforms. I mean, you know, your comments about Alex Wright's Fidelity Special Situations, you know, no one's expecting them to pick the right funds and the right managers all the time. It's just a question of a consistent approach and not going overboard with particular fund managers, and when things are going wrong, making timely interventions. So we'll see how, you know, if the performance of Alex Wright's fund doesn't improve, you know, what their oversight committees and governance will do there. But we've spent a long time talking about it. There's a lot going on their website. It's worth having a look. There's a number of new tools, and it all fits into a range of services the company's aiming to provide. You know, we're focused on the shortlist because that's the one our listeners and our readers are most interested in. But you know, it's a challenge for a company that's trying to do a little bit of everything, and maybe there's a little bit more streamlining to come in that respect. Dan, have you got anything else to add?
Well, no, I mean, I would add that, you know, I haven't played around with the website properly yet to test out all these features. But, you know, on the face of it, they're pretty handy features, you know, being able to shortlist funds based on the yield that they provide and how often they pay that income. I mean, that's something that, you know, is very important to investors. But, you know, we've touched on this before in previous podcasts, that it's really hard to find out all the details that you need to know about a fund's income in contrast to investment trusts. So any moves that are made on that front to make it easier to understand who's paying a good income, how often they're paying it, and how well their fund has performed is a pretty good thing.
Yeah, that's a really good point. You know, income, finding an income is so important and so difficult at the moment. So anything that they do in that area is to be welcomed. And going back to investment trusts, I know I was moaning about them not being included on the shortlist, but it's worth pointing out that the analyst team at Hargreaves is going to be doing more coverage of investment trusts and writing more regular reports about some of the more prominent or interesting investment trusts. So I'm personally going to be looking forward to that. So it's it's a mixed picture, but I think there is signs of progress, and we'll wait and see what happens. Anyway, Dan, that's enough for now, but very good to catch up with you. Enjoy the rest of your week, and I'll speak to you soon.
Speak to you next week. Cheers, Gavin.